July 21, 2021. It's a Walk for Pedro show.
Thank you.
for Peter Show. Happy Wednesday. Deja vu all over again, people. Start out John Coltrane, Blue World, take one from that stuff they found in the Attica, Canada. Naima, take one. And then The Inevitable Valley, Jess Coble. And because of those incredible Estonian software engineers with this convention, that's who we got aboard with us. I'm not man alone. I got brother Jess Coble. Welcome aboard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we got to thank, once again, Brutal Sound Effects crew for the connect.
Brutal Sound Effects crew, SF represent.
Yeah, now, man, trippy-ass music from you, Jess, which is beautiful and righteous investment in a scene that's fucking right, unpredictable, and fucking full of stuff to inspire you in your own, or my own. So I'm curious about how you got to all this going. Can you, will you take a trip through your music journey and bring your earliest musical recollection, please?
I mean, my earliest musical recollection would be sitting next to a fire with my dad, like, at, like, three, listening to a vinyl of the Muppet movie. Like, and then I think after that, like, I don't know, I think I was, like, 5 years old when I, like, I don't know, I didn't have a lot of cash growing up, and so, like, I was just, like, making fun for myself, so, like, I was straight up, like, drawing a keyboard on a 2x4 and, like, building or shooting a music video at the age of 6, like, just, like, trying to just do something with nothing.
So it was kind of like a prop, like you were miming it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there was no sound. Like, the sound was something I was figuring out later. I was just, like, I was just making it happen. Like, I recruited, like, a friend who ended up becoming my stepbrother into the mix of it and, like, just grabbed the VHS camera and went for it.
Well, now, did that Muppet movie have the band? Did they have Animal on the drums?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, yeah.
I'm curious. Yeah. Now, so if you're drawing on 2x4s, there's probably no instruments in the house.
Nah. Like, I mean, there was always singing. Like, everything my mom did, she
did.
That's
right.
Like,
the voice is an instrument, people. So the bottoms of your feet, that's probably our first drumsticks.
Right.
So your mom was a singer. Okay. So there's always singing going on. So you did have kind of music. And were they listeners? Did they have a little record collection?
Oh, yeah. Like, like a whole lot of Grateful Dead, some, like, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Like, and then, I mean, the Beatles, but I was never really a Beatles fan. I mean, maybe a controversial take, but I don't know.
No, I remember, because everybody else liked them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I look back now,
they're fucking great musicians and everything. Paul McCartney, Monster Bass Man, and all that stuff. But man, in the day, like, too many other people liked them.
Yeah, it's like when I was just around for a resurgence, and like, mad respect for the fact that they went on the evolution they did from like pop, 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 pop to like tripping the hell out within like the span of 7 years is everything they put out. But like, beyond that, like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, we don't need to feel good about making them feel bad.
I mean, shit, noise is far more critical than music.
Right. And you know that I am the Walrus has got some noisy fucking parts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's got some kind of trip out. Like you said, it's quite an evolution. And they did learn themselves on rock and roll, right? Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Little Richard. So you can't say they didn't pay some due. Let me ask you this. First record you bought with your own money?
Same day I bought Nirvana's Nevermind and Janet Jackson's Janet.
Whoa. Okay. And so that's telling me right away, for you, music is music. You don't care about genre shit.
No. Like, I mean, I was growing up in the 90s. I was, like, buying, like Snoop Dogg's fucking Doggy Style the day it came out, while also, like buying like Siamese Dream the day it came out, like, just like whatever is good. Like, it wasn't about musical perfectionism. It was about giving me something I could feel.
Did you ever find out about a record called Hustler Convention?
No.
And this cat named Lightning Rod, he was actually one of the last poets who made this kind of fucking opera. And a lot of the early rappers, of course, last poets were important, but this is like in the middle 70s. It's kind of a trip on Superfly, except it's two young guys, right? They're growing up in the neighborhood together. Check it out. You probably can listen to it for free on YouTube.com. But Hustler's Convention by Lightning Rod.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It might blow a little I'm surprised. I ask young people, and they know so much about different music, so that's why I just put that out there. What about the first gig you saw?
First gig I ever saw, well, I mean, like, growing up, up in Seattle, like, there was so many bands, and I was, like, just in bands, like, so early and so often that, like, there was tons of, like, just music that I was seeing, but, like, I was just a little too young to, like, get into seeing a bunch of the grunge acts. So, like, the first real, like, apart from a bunch of Grange Hall shows and shit, like, outside the city, my first real, like, going to Seattle for an arena show was the show called End It that was, like, who was it? It was Weezer, Rancid's, Sky Cries Mary, 311, Hole's first show since Kurt's death, and Green Day.
Wow. Me and D Boone's first gig was T-Rex.
Hell yeah.
Everybody says that. I mean, you know, we didn't know. Fuck. Actually, they weren't that big in the U.S. It was bigger in England. But we just liked his voice, the way he looked. It was trippy. I think Ringo took the cover of the picture of the slider. What about school? Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
All that shit. Like, I mean, it started on trumpet, like, in elementary school because the guy leading the band was a trumpet player, so I knew he was going to pick the parts that had, like, tons of trumpet and, like, was going to pay more attention to them, so it was, like, kind of, like, one, like, a year and a half intensive of, like, just, like, getting everything I could from that instructor, and then I switched over to trombone and
there's some bass
player. Hell yeah. And played that in like the jazz band, the marching band,
let me ask you about the marching band. You know, trumpet versus the bone, the mouthpiece, right? A lot easier to march with the fucking bone.
oh yeah But you don't have to worry about that shit, like, just jamming into your teeth either. Like,
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, you can relax a little bit. You're at the front of the line because nobody wants to get hit in the back of the head with a trombone.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's kind of getting you on that road to noise because we're not talking just 12 notes. There's microtone.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
like
you're
breathless
getting in there.
Bass.
Totally. Yeah, well, and so, like, yeah, then I got into, like, playing trombone and jazz band, which inevitably, like, at that point, I'm like, okay, so I have friends who are all musical. I want to start a band. Like, okay, what do you want to play? I walked up to my stepbrother. I'm like, what do you want to play? He's like, well, I want to play drums. I'm like, okay, get a drum set. I walk over to my other friend. I'm like, what do you want to play? I want to play guitar. Okay, you're the guitarist. Walked over to my other friend. What do you want to do? He's like, I want to sing. I'm like, okay, it looks like I'm playing bass. So I went and, like, got together, like, scratched together $100 and got, like, the cheapest bass they had at Diversified Pawn and Loan, which was this, like, pawn shop just north of the city of Seattle that, like, all the bands would, like, go and, like, sell off their tour rigs to, like, make a little bit of cash.
There's a talent, Ballard, right?
Yeah, well, Ballard, like, is a little, like, is still, like, kind of Seattle. Like, okay. It was more, like, Northgate-ish, but, like, I used to throw a monthly, or a every other week, experimental showcase, in Ballard at the spot called Mr. Spot's Chai House that was called Chickenhead Church. That was, like, a crazy, like, three-act format, like, at a spot that, like, was serving, like, food and beverages, and, like, people are just able to get together for free and, like, have, like, a community kind of, like, noise experimental show. And that was, like, I don't know, that was, like, 2005, 2006.
I worked a room there called the Tractor Tavern, and they had the most bitchin' load-in, right? It had a dock. You could park the boat there. I wish every pad on tour could have. Look, you gave me this speak up I want to play, okay?
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. Yeah, that's Speak Up from Jess Coble. Then we had King Champion Sound with Jerry Love, a brand new record from these cats out of Holland. I'm In Between Two Worlds. Sam Locke Ward featuring Chuck Hoffman. Ooh, it's fancy. Bob Bucco Jr. with Winding. Both those cats are Iowa. Body surfing the river Yadkin from Bombs Pregnant, D.C. area. Parallel System, System 28 from Rambutan Proj out of upstate New York. What do they call it? They call it the Hudson Valley, yeah. Andreas Brandel, Chris Robert, Michael Potter, Salen Hay, and then the organizer, Eric Hardiman. Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask, Part A1. Yes, brand new stuff from Bronze Age UFO out of Baltimore. I don't know if it's the main proj or the side proj of Mogulman, but they got some new stuff too. And then finally, Waited from Jess Coble. Okay, so people, off air, I got enlightened to the fact that Jess here was the bassmeister at the fucking Shithard Center in Seattle.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. That means you must have learned some. Well, the bone helped, right? Even though there's no string on it.
Totally. Well, and that got me just, like, deep-rooted in the low end. And then, like, I mean, I was doing a lot of jazz stuff at that point before, like, and so that got me into improvisation as well. But then, like, I slid over from trombone to bass for the jazz band and the vocal jazz band in high school. And so then I just started, like, running with that. And, like, the band that I initially tried to pull together in middle school, like, kind of, like, pulled together that drummer, ended up being my drummer throughout all of high school, as well as my stepbrother, and like pulled together a couple different bands that I really started focusing on bass with. But I mean, like so many people, they don't necessarily want a bassist, they want a guitar accompanist. And like, so I just started getting like deep in tone and texture and started like just playing the effects pedals almost as much as I was playing the instrument.
You're talking the bass.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because, you know, when you start putting it through the pedals, you can get a little, you lose some of that punch and stuff. But that brings on other textures. So you were composing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, I just became a machine. Like, I was just, like, sight reading 30-second note pickups on like, bass runs. Like, just, like, mad walking bass. Like, just out of control. And then I was just like, but, yeah, I want to kind of slow it down and, like, actually, like, play stuff I can feel a little bit more. And yeah, I got rolling with a few bands.
Well,
and
let me get your take on this with bass bone or your bass guitar. The more notes you play, the smaller you get because of the low frequencies with the wide wavelengths.
Nothing has time to evolve, totally.
Right, so it ain't a search for the most notes, it's a search for the good ones.
Well, and the bassist for I'm a Robot, who was playing with Beck for a while, like, he really turned me on to that. Like, there was this one performance they did of Nobody's Fault But My Own on Saturday Night Live back in the day. And just, like, letting a bass note just, like, ring out and just, like, sing is so fucking powerful and beautiful.
Mendelssohn, right? He's a good player. Yeah, smart. Well, I'll tell you, Herbie Flowers doing that bass for Lou.
Yeah.
Walk on the Wild Side, right? He's glistening on a stand. He overdubbed a stand-up in an electric. So he glisses up and then glisses down with the other one.
Oh,
damn. And you know what I mean? Only two moves, right? One interval. But, man, that's so powerful for that tune, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, how many on AM radio and get how many guys are selling their ass for a living? I mean, that was pretty trippy.
Yeah.
Little Joe never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay. I mean, Herbie Flowers did a great, great bass line there. And I think one of his things, besides not eating too much drugs, is don't play too many notes.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say be stupid. I'm just saying the physics.
Yeah.
If we get all up there trying to be Paganini, maybe the cape works, but the physics don't. You know, we get smaller and smaller, and okay.
It kicks back to like the '90s, like route that I came up with. It's more important to play what you feel than to play it perfectly.
Oh yeah, yeah. And maybe another side to that is aiding and abetting the tune also. Maybe it ain't about just the player, right?
Yeah.
Right, the tune, and we got all, especially bass, man. When you're working good with the drummer to help push that tune, make people feel it, right? Bass, in a lot of ways, we feel that motherfucker more than hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm so glad D. Boone's mom put me on it. And you know, in the old days, like 70s, okay, you say 90s, it was like right field. That's where you put your retarded friend. Like right field in Little League, where nobody hits the ball. You know?
Yeah. It's like you can still be a part of the band.
Okay. So, but in another way, you're kind of like a fucking point guard, huh? You're running the floor. It's trippy. I mean, what a base can do.
More like a center in that, like it's getting dumped to you, and then you're dumping it out because you're that solid bedrock that everybody can bounce off of.
Oh, okay. That's another. Well, I'm thinking of Magic Johnson. Like, Byron, you ain't getting the ball. Like, Magic decided who was going to get, yeah. And so that was just maybe wishful thinking. And, you know, James Worthy, I got to meet him, and he's a bass player, he told me. I said, what kind you play, James? He said, Fender percussion. Okay. But then I met his roommate years later. And this guy said in the morning, part of his, before he went to prac, he did a bong hit and prac bass. So he wasn't bullshit. He just, a couple letters got twisted around. So, okay, so this these bands, now this was your band that you got your stepbrother and your buddies in, right?
It was me and a buddy who met in high school. Like, he was, like, new kid who came to town, and, like, I was, like, cat that everybody thought was on heroin because I was just like walking around with my headphones on, like if I wasn't in class, like just like not talking or like really interacting with anybody. I was just like deep in my music looking for that sound. And like, so he came to town and we started playing. We got this drummer who we then lost because, his mom was like, hey, I have this opportunity at this other job. And so either I can buy you a PlayStation and we move and, or you stay and you're in your band. He's like, I'll take a PlayStation over a band.
Come on.
And so then I brought my, like, my friend who ended up being my stepbrother into, the band. And he was like our solid drummer for a good long minute.
And were you writing most of the stuff for this band?
I mean, it was definitely a collaboration
Okay.
Yeah, me and my buddy. Yeah.
Because I'm always interested in when the bass players write the music.
Yeah, like sometimes it works out well. Sometimes you get a Primus situation. Sometimes
else in the old days, Chris Squire. You know, it was his band. Yes, it was his band.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why the bass is so fucking loud. Anyway. You can do that. Family man in a reggae band, there's no problem, right? But yeah, you start Bogarting that other stuff, it's a little out of proportion. There's something about James Jamerson, or we were talking off air, Larry Graham, right? Where you're fucking, oh yeah.
James Jamerson was a beast. Oh my
God. We all owe him, right? We owe him
tons.
We owe tons. Right? One finger and four strings. He didn't have to get up into that other stuff. and then somebody stole that. We don't know where the P bass is, right? It says funk. It's carved in there though, but some asshole stole it. Headphones on heroin. Capitol Hill.
I mean, that was in this little shit town just north of Seattle called Arlington.
Oh, okay.
I was born out on the East Coast, and then at five, my mom moved me out to this little town just north of Seattle, and then grew up there, and then.
There was a problem with that stuff. I lost some friends.
Yeah, it was bad. You couldn't grow up in the 90s in Seattle and not know somebody who was lost to heroin. Yeah. Like, it's just.
I also know some people who made it out, though, too.
Yeah. I mean, there are people who are still functional addicts. Like, and there are people who
got clean and stayed clean.
Got cleaned up, yeah.
But a lot of people didn't. It's very heavy people. Liquor still kills more people, though. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Not to get all preachy, but...
No, that took my dad.
What's that?
I said that took my dad. By the time, it was cancer. Like, it was like a brain, lung, back, and leg by the time it got him. But, like, he was the cat who would, like, throw a 30-pack of Budweiser in a backpack and climb to the top of a mountain and just sit there and drink it all day. Like, he was drinking, but he was drinking, like, in an adventure.
Okay. That's a trip, man. Just we're at the end of the first hour, July 21, 2021, Dish Wap Peter Show, special guest, Jess Coble.
Yep.
Almost said cable like an idiot. Hold tight for hour two. July 21, 2021, it's the second hour of Wap Peter Show. For HIV for another month. She's confident he's okay.
Stopping your baby getting HIV is a game of chance in South Africa. And it's a game no mother should have to play.
Merlin Morris reporting from South African political coverage of the AIDS Day events and the situation in many different countries around the world. BBC website, if you are online, don't hesitate to check it out. There's plenty there. BBCnews.com. You can run through all the main world headlines, including the reflection of that story, which you know was hearing from your leader. Thank you.
That sucks, because I'll think, like, it's still going, and then, like, I realize it's stopped, and I'm just watching a little beep 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 thing. I don't want to.
Well, for Pedro, should we start off the second hour? You gave me a few of these things. It's like things with numbers, like daily drop. This one's called Tadpole 120805-01.
Subtitled Carmelita.
Carmelita.
That's a track off of this album, the new that I put out with this crew,
the new deconstruction. Okay,
It's a total ripoff of the. It's just a translation of Einstrodisen Neubauten, in English, pretty much. But
new collapsing buildings, right?
Yeah.
I got to see them in the desert. It was the last time I ate 8L, 1983, in the Mojave.
That would be an experience.
No, we say Mojave. We say Pedro like assholes, but we don't say Mojave. We don't say. What else? Jalapenos and tortillas. But we do say Pedro. I don't know why. I came here from Virginia. They were already saying this. Don't blame white people. We have Plaster Men after that with Froth and Lucas Abella, Nudie. Nudie with two O's, not the perv. Resaca Pero Fuerta Calibos from Irvine, Texas, between Fort Worth and Dallas. Over. From the new Deconstruction. That's also from this collab you're doing with these guys.
We kind of imploded on tour at one point.
Oh.
I mean, there's been talks of another album, and I've been slowly putting together some stuff. Actually, the trip hop vocalist in the group has recently been kind of pushing the ball more than anybody else in the group, and is finally getting some really solid production together. And so there's a possibility of a bubbling new Deconstruction album, but we had one EP, and then as soon as we got to New York on tour, we recorded another at the spot, Looming Productions, that had full drum kit, a bass stack, a guitar stack, and a mixing board, and all you needed to do was show up with a way to capture two tracks of the mix, and you were good to go. And so we just rolled out there and recorded an album as soon as we got to New York, and released that on black cassette with silver hand sprawl Sharpie, wrapped in a Spanish Book of Mormon with a card on the front that made it look like a bar of soap. But I mean, we got them into Hospital Records, which was kind of cool at the time, which was the noise shop in New York.
Well, from that, and before you were telling me with the rock and roll in Seattle area, what was in between? Probably a buttload of shit, right?
Yeah. I started taking bass lessons and vocal lessons and trying to sing for groups and look for shit, but everything didn't quite feel right. I had a band Bonsai Kitty that was all right, but it was a three piece that didn't quite know what it wanted to be or where it was going. And then I ended up hooking up with my buddy Abraham Moses up there, who has this project Prison Food, as a solo project. But we started this crew, Novahead versus Chickentron, we just got together and recorded. We didn't practice. We either recorded an album or played a show, and that's all we did. And so in our first year, I ended up making these 16 disc box sets, and we dropped our first album at the Wooden Octopus Skull Fest, which was this crazy noise fest up in Seattle in 2005.
Let's talk about noise, because you kind of make for you, music is music, right? But you verge away from jazz, trombone, and rock and roll trios into this kind of experimental, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And the guy we should blame is Abe Moses?
Yeah, okay. for sure. Well, he had a massive PA in his living room and a bunch of gears and samplers, and I just had too much gear for my own good, and so I just would load up all the shit I had and roll over to his spot, but he was just far enough away that nobody else went over to record. So he and I were just hanging out and recording albums. We'd drop in a 90 a 90-minute tape and, like, record on one side, and that's a 45-minute EP. Like, and they all ended up being, like, 46 and a half minutes because you get a little bit more than half on a cassette. Like, it's kind of why there's a whole bunch of, like, noise EPs that are, like, the 32-minute mark is because they recorded on half of a 60-minute cassette. And, like,
makes sense.
Yeah. And so, like
the media,
yeah. Like,
the media dictates the fucking form.
Totally.
But what I'm saying is this was kind of a sea change in your music life.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, I've been, like, figuring out what I want to do, but I was still, like, stuck in, like, trying to get it right. Like, I had, at that time, like, I was putting out this series of, like, three EPs that, like, now I've rolled up into, like, a full-length album under my own name, but at the time I was releasing them under the name Theory. And, like, so I had, like, I had one night that I spent, like, all night long, like, doing, like, 323 takes of this, like, vocal and guitar line.
Wow.
Because in my head, I had to get those two at the same time for it to have the heart and soul of the song right. And at the same time, I was having to give this guitar back to a girl I was breaking up with that the song was about.
Uh-oh,
so it was all this,
drama,
like,
little drama.
Like, mental gymnastics.
You know, there's a,
like,
James Jamerson story about recording with Smokey Robbins. He said that take 247, that's when rigor mortis starts setting in the groove.
Yeah, right?
Here, I want to play this thing you gave me, another proj, Zero Collective.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Yeah. Exposed Roots. Daily drop 2552. There's 2,500 fucking drops in one day.
Yeah. I've been putting out an original track with that project every day since November 22nd, 2011. So today is day 3,530 of putting out a track every day.
Okay, that's bitching, man. That's Mail Thompson said, "Discipline conquers hesitation."
Mm-hmm.
So
it's removing the filter of like, is this good enough?
Right.
It's like finding something that I feel to be real, like. That incorporates something of the day into it. Like, and I tend to like try and wait till the end of the day. So I feel like I have the funk of the day all over me. So I can just kind of like express that however it has made me feel throughout the experience. But like,
From the hip. Redacted. Next we had Piao Soufflé from Matthew Beck and Al Margolis. Incredible. Yeah, Al Margolis with the cassette scene, right, and all this stuff. I've learned about this later on with the CDR scene. No More Trolls, Daily Drop 3100, Zero Collect. So Zero Collective is basically you alone?
I mean, it's an open source collaboration. So, like, I mean, it's been as much as, like, 13 people for a single performance. But it very much is, like, me and whoever is around me coming together to make a track that day.
For the Daily Drop?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed only Daily Drops is where the name says Zero Collective. Okay. So that's a thing that you developed with that. And it was kind of a parallel thing, right? A lot of these projects you got going on at the same time.
Yeah, like right now, I'm like War Hippie and the Zero Collective are rolling. A lot of these things are like kind of overlapping and like braiding through each other.
And, Mr. Moses, he's still in the mix?
He's kind of like pushed the shadows, but I'm hoping to get him back out and things. About 13 years ago, I kind of hit the road and like spent a year like solid, like circling the country, like dropping into Seattle and like helping keep the ball rolling up there. And then like kind of joined the circus and moved to LA and like settled in here for a while. And, I don't know, like probably like 4 or 5 years ago, the scene in Seattle kind of had just been so gentrified, and like there's just the software world up there has pushed anybody who isn't like making mad cash out of the city to the point that like the noise scene is having. I mean, apart from like a few like solid kickers, like Forest Friends are still up there, like doing good work and getting out there. But for the most part, like a lot of Seattle has stopped playing.
Can I run a name by you? To see if you know Tupperwares.
Mm-mm. Tupperwares, I know Melting Plastics.
Tupperwares was a singing group, and the band group behind them was El Duce, Eldon, Hoke, who became the Mentors guy, and they became the Screamers.
Oh shit!
So believe it or not, the first band that could sell out the Whiskey in our scene in the 70s punk came from Seattle, dude.
Oh.
People don't know that. That's a trip. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, July 21, 2021. Just Watt Pedro Show special guest, Jess Coble. Hang tight for hour three. July 21, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
passing out free hits of black acid to anyone who could stick out his tongue.
Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Robo Griefer. This is Daily Drop 3496. Zero Collective. Jess Cobble. Chris Boca after that. Get him out. He used to play guitar for Come. Talia over there. Uzi. Boston. Co-ed with Switchblade, brand new. And then what you mentioned this earlier. Nova Head versus Chickatron. Blue Sabbath, Black Cherry.
Yeah, that one's kind of a tip of the hat to Blue Sabbath, Black Cheer, which is this crew that was really holding shit down in the like early aughts in Seattle. I mean, yeah, you had Stan, you had, who was just kind of the godfather of the noise scene up there at that point, like really taking a whole bunch of cats under his wing. And then you had William, who was running the Electric Heavyland, which was this badass record store in like Wallingford, just across the freeway from the U District, that was just like the like. It was this tiny little hole in the wall, but the Melvins were playing there, and like they would get everybody's noise albums up on the shelf, and like it was just a great community spot. Really did a lot for
Melvin's
for the time.
First gig was opening for the Minutemen, something called the Mountaineer Lodge or some shit.
Hell yeah!
A couple of years ago, a little bit ago. I think Buzz lives here, and Dale they live here, SoCal now.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so. You were talking about when you went to New York City and they had a big setup for you for the new deconstruction. You guys were able to just make a record like that. Do you got a situation like that here?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I have like way, way, way too big of a speakers and a studio kind of setup at my personal spot, but that's not too great. But at the same time, like, I don't know, I have a lot of like I helped Cherokee Records get into their new home, so I have like spots like that I can kind of drop into if I really need to. There are a lot of studios, but there aren't studios quite set up like that. Lumion Productions was such a strange beast in that they gave you all the ingredients you needed to cook and just trusted you to like handle your shit and like do it yourself. And so like, I mean, granted, like I think it was like $20 an hour. Actually, there's one spot that is definitely like that. That's absolutely amazing. That's like, it's not down here, but it's in Oakland. It's called the Vintage Synthesizer Museum. And like, you have an entire studio space that's like broken down into like five different pods that each have their own sub mixer that's going to this like main control computer that you can like record all the stems of everything you're doing. But they just have like so much classic vintage gear. They have like a Mellotron. They have like Buchla rack systems. They have like all kinds of crazy like monosynths and polysynths. Like, there are some spots, but like
who's the cat that got that together? That sounds bitchin'.
It's this badass dude named Lance up there who is just super cool. I'm actually trying to relocate the whole thing down to LA, and so I'm kind of trying to like shop for a home to like have him be able to stick all of his synthesizers.
So he owns all these things. So
yeah,
you can look at them like a museum, but then you can also work with them like they're fucking instruments.
Totally. And so I'm trying to find like a large scale studio situation that has like a Studio C or something that hasn't been being used, that they want to like get traffic to their spot and at the same time be able to draw from this like crazy collection of synths to like be able to just like grab one for our line for a recording, like just like on tap. Like,
are you hip to this pad that the two main Devo guys have on Sunset called Mutato?
No.
Okay, they got a little, it looks like the Fabulous Four miniaturized, and they make all this like Rugrats and kind of music there. But for a while, have you ever heard of the Tonto's Expanding Headband? You know, there's what Stevie Wonder used like on three of his albums. These two guys from England. I mean, it's a whole fucking room, one synthesizer.
Damn.
And it was there for a while. I think it's back in England now, but trip you about that. Look, I'm gonna play the whole fucking War Hippie cassette, okay? You gave me both parts, and let's bring it. Wow, for Peter, so final music for this edition. We're a little bit of negative talk there, but not too much. Just a tiny bit. Blood Money, Side A, War Hippie. And then Papa Corona Come Dancing from Regis Philbin's block. Sound, yeah, he put all the fucking letters in one word. Thanks, Brother Phil. Regis Philbin, okay. And then Side B of Blood Money, War Hippie. And you said that's your most current thing, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, Cole and I have been, like, touring around with that. We headlined the End Times Festival of Experimental Noise a couple years back out in Brooklyn, back when it was still at the Silent Barn, which is no more, which was an amazing venue. Yeah, like, we've been doing some fun stuff. Our last thing, like, did a shoot out at Malibu Creek State Park around the water tower that's up there, and had that be a part of a Brutal Sound Effects digital gathering that was pretty fun, as well as part of a Coaxial Island of Misfit Toys thing, which is this experimental monthly showcase I've been doing with Mike Meanstreets and Mitch Brown down here for the last 6 years in L.A., just trying to having a free showcase that gets all the performers paid and just trying to add something to the community and be about, make, I don't know, like, tagline of at all times is working diligently to make the West Coast the shit.
Yeah. Now, you're talking performances.
Yeah.
Okay. And kind of, yeah, maybe not so many, but starting to come back. I did.
Looking at when we're going to be bringing it back, I'm still not super comfortable with, like, doing indoor shows. I'm kind of planning, like, a little bit of a tour in October, like, with some actual indoor venues in Portland and Seattle, but I'm not really feeling, like, I'm feeling like outdoor shows are the way to go until then.
What about, you know, the whatever situation these months? Have you been trading files?
I've still been, like, diligently doing the daily drop all
oh,
throughout
yeah.
the entire
day. I'm talking about, like, I've made albums with dudes I've never even met.
Yeah.
You know, so the internet, you know, cause sure, you can use it to spread lies and bullshit, but you can also collab with people. It's interesting.
For sure. It's definitely making it so, like, and you have the opportunity to reach out to, like, people that you respect and that you like enjoy their work and, like, let them know that, and, like, and through that, like, maybe have some sort of, like, digital collaboration with them as well, or just, like, share a little bit of positivity in people's world. Like,
That's a good point. And where can people find you on the internet?
So all the daily drops are at the site noiseboard.com, but BORED, like, I'm so bored, I'm going to go check out some noise right now. Also
like
on
NOISEBORED.com?
Yeah, or it comes up as, like, the zerocollective.net.org.com. It all just links back to the same thing.
Yeah.
Also on Instagram at the Zero Collective.
Don't you have those links at your main baby?
No, I am disparate. Like, we had a solid War Hippie site, but, like, honestly, it got too popular for its own good, and, like, our server costs started being like hundreds of dollars a month, and so we just dropped the site, so, which is not the way to go when you're, like, dealing with, like, something like getting popular.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, like, there's a little bit of keep it secret, keep it safe, but at the same time, like,
I ask you this? You're a cat who spent a lot of time with the straight music, right? Learning in school, taking singing lessons, bass lessons, then getting into the experiment and putting on your own things, right? DIY and learning from Mr. Moses and all this. What has this taught you about music?
That so much of it is just showing up and doing the thing, and, like, that if you don't feel it, don't play it. Like, and, just try and find something true that, like, rings solid for generations, like the universal truths, when it comes to, like, if you're actually going to take the time to say some lyrics or put some lyrics on paper.
Right. Now, a lot of your music's instrumental, right?
Yeah, yeah, especially the Daily Drops.
Okay. But you're still putting sincere intent, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So titles mean a lot, right? Well, not yeah. so much.
Well, and it depends, like, because, I mean, sometimes, like, I don't know, like, I for a while was, have been drawing album artwork from this artist, Beeple, who in the last 6 months has kind of exploded on the world in terms of, like, the whole NFT wonder and everything. But, like, he was just somebody who was just putting out digital stuff that I respected back in the day. And so, like, I would do, like, pieces that accompanied the digital pieces. And so there would be, like, a cohesive, like, visual and audio, like, piece under the same banner. Not always. Not.
No, but yeah. Art is art, right? So you can cross boundaries and mix up mediums and shit. Why not, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's bitchin'. Let the freak flag fly. I want to thank you so much, Jess, for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
You know, get thousands of Daily Drops. You get more of the stuff. Please come back on the show, man, and keep us updated on all these projects you got going. It seems like you're on a creative streak, brother.
Having a blast doing it.
Okay. Thanks so much again. Thanks to the Brutal Sound Effects crew. People, it's been July 21, 2021. That's hard to say. Just want Peter, so keep your powder dry.